With white ash, the Omani elders and headmen marked out the dueling ring on the hard-baked ground below the walls of the fort. This was a circle 20 paces in diameter. All the Arabs who had fought with Zayn al-Din had been trapped within the fort, now lined the parapets. Dorian's forces, including the crews from the captured dhows who had declared their loyalty to him, were drawn up on the bay side of the ring, facing the opposing forces on the walls of the fort. Jim had explained the rules and the object of the duel to Beshwayo, and he was enthralled. He no longer resented being deprived of the right to storm the fort and wipe out the defenders. For him, this gladiatorial contest was even greater sport.
"Hey, this is a fine way to solve a dispute, Samoya. It is truly a warrior's thing. I shall make it my own custom in the future."
The entire Beshwayo army squatted in ranks behind Dorian's legions. The high parapet and the slope of the ground afforded every man present an unobstructed view of the ring. Dorian, flanked by Jim and Mansur, stood at the forefront of this array, facing the closed gates of the fort. He wore only a simple white robe and his feet were bare. In accordance with the rules of the contest, he was unarmed. There was another blast on the ram's horn, and the gates of the fort swung open. 4 men marched out and came down the hill. They were in half-armour, bronze helmets and chainmail overshirts, with greaves protecting their lower legs. They were big men with cold eyes and brutal faces, the executioners of the Omani court. Torture and death were their vocation. They took up their positions at the 4 points of the circle and leaned on the hilts of their drawn swords. There was a pause, and then another trumpet blast. A second procession came down the slope. It was led by Mullah Kalik. Behind him came Rahmad and 4 other tribal headmen. Then, with an escort of 5 armed men, the tall figure of Zayn al-Din limped after them. They stopped on the far side of the ring, facing Dorian. Rahmad advanced into the centre of the ring. "In the name of the one God and his true prophet, we are met here this day to decide the fate of our nation. Al-Salil," he bowed towards Dorian, "and Zayn al-Din," he turned and bowed again, "this day one of you will die, and the other will ascend the elephant throne of Oman." He held out his hands, and the 2 headmen who flanked him passed Rahmad a pair of scimitars. Rahmad stabbed the point of one of these weapons into the earth just inside the ash line of the ring and left it standing upright. Then he crossed the circle and placed the other weapon exactly opposite. "Only one of you will be permitted to leave this ring alive. The 4 referees, he pointed to the waiting executioners, have been strictly charged with the duty of killing immediately whichever of you is driven or thrown outside this line of ashes." He touched the line with the toe of his sandal. "Now, Mullah Kalik will lead the prayers begging for the guidance of God in these affairs." The holy man's voice droned in the silence as he commended the combatants to God and their fate. Dorian and Zayn stared across the ring at each other. Their faces were expressionless, but their eyes burned with hatred and anger. The mullah ended his prayer. "In God's name, let us begin." "In God's name, make ready," Rahmat called. Jim and Mansur lifted the loose robe over Dorian's head. He wore only a white loincloth under it. Where the sun had not touched him, his skin was smooth and white as cream in a jug. At the same time, his escort helped Zayn remove his robe. Now he wore only a loincloth, and his skin was the colour of old ivory. Dorian knew that Zayn was his senior by only 2 years. They were both in their middle 40s, and the effects of age were becoming apparent on their bodies. There were streaks of grey in their hair and beards, and a fleshiness around their waistlines. However, their limbs were clean and hard, and their movements were lithe as they stepped into the ring. Even the impediment in Zayn's step seemed more sinister than inhibiting. They were matched in height, but Zayn was the heavier man, bigger boned and wider in the shoulder. Since childhood, both had been trained in the warrior's way, but they had matched against each other once only before this day. However, they had been children then, and they and the world about them were altered. They stood, just out of arm's reach of each other. Neither spoke, but they assessed each other carefully. Rahmad stepped between them. He carried a length of silken cord, like a gossamer, and strong as steel. He had measured its length and cut it precisely 5 paces shorter than the diameter of the ring. Rahmad went to Zayn first. Though he knew full well that he was left-handed, Rahmad asked formally, "Which hand?" Disdaining a reply, Zayn proffered his right hand. Rahmad tied the end of the cord round his wrist. He was a sailor, and the knot would neither tighten nor slip, yet it would hold like a steel cuff. Rahmad came to Dorian with the other end of the cord. Dorian gave him his left hand, and he tied it with the same type of knot. The two combatants were linked together. Only the death of one could part them now. "Mark your swords," Rahmad ordered them, and they glanced back at the scimitar that stood behind each man on the perimeter of the ring. The silk cord was too short to allow them simultaneously to reach a weapon. "A blast on the ram's horn will begin this contest, but only death will end it," intoned Rahmad. He and the 4 headmen left the ring. A terrible silence descended on the field. Even the breeze seemed to still, and the gulls ceased their mewing cries. Rahmad looked to the trumpeter on the parapet and raised his hand. The trumpeter lifted the curled horn to his lips. Rahmad dropped his hand, and the blast sobbed and echoed off the cliffs of the bluff. A huge wave of sound swept over the ring as every man in the convocation shouted together. Neither contestant moved. They faced each other still, leaning back on the cord, keeping it taut, taking the strain, assessing each other's weight and strength, the way a fisherman feels a heavy fish after the strike. Neither could reach his scimitar unless he could force the other to give ground. They strained silently. Suddenly, Dorian darted forward, and Zayn reeled back as the cord went slack. Then he whirled and ran for his sword. Grimly, Dorian noted the slight clumsiness as he turned into his crippled side. Dorian ran after him and gathered in a double arm's length of the slack in the cord. He gained the centre of the ring and shortened the length of cord between them by almost half. From this position he dominated the ring. But he had sacrificed precious ground for that. Zayn was reaching out for the hilt of his scimitar. Dorian took a turn of the cord around his wrist and planted his feet. He anchored the cord, and Zayn came up hard against the end of it with such force that it snapped him round onto his bad side. For a moment he was off balance, and Dorian heaved him backwards and gained another arm's length of the cord. Abruptly, Dorian changed the angle of his pull. He made himself the fulcrum around which Zayn pivoted. Like the stone on the end of a slingshot, Dorian used the impetus to launch Zayn towards the white ash line, straight at one of the executioners who waited with drawn sword to meet him. As it seemed he must be hurled backwards out of the ring, Zayn found purchase with his stronger leg and checked the slingshot effect. He teetered on the line and raised a puff of white ash, but he managed to stop himself going out. The executioner stood behind him with the blade raised to make the stroke. Now there was slack in the cord, and Dorian had lost the leverage. He raced forward to crash into Zayn with his shoulder and drive him that last yard across the line. Zayn saw him coming, braced his legs and dropped his shoulder to meet him. They came together with a force that jarred every bone in their bodies and stood like a carving in marble, straining and grunting. Dorian had the heel of his right hand under Zayn's chin and forced his head back. Slowly, Zayn's spine arched over the line, and the executioner moved forward a pace to meet him as he stepped over it. Zayn drew a hissing breath and summoned the last vestige of his strength. His face seemed to darken and swell with the effort, but slowly his back straightened. He pushed Dorian back a step. The noise was deafening. 1,000 voices joined in, and the Beshwaya warriors were dancing and drumming on their shields. A hurricane of sound swept over the ring. Zayn exerted his greater weight and gradually worked his shoulder down under Dorian's armpit, then suddenly heaved upwards. He took the weight off Dorian's legs and forced him to lose traction and grip. The bare soles of his feet skidded in the dust, and he was driven back a yard, then another. Dorian was pitting all his strength against Zayn's thrust. Abruptly, Zayn jumped back. Dorian staggered forward off balance. Swift as a lizard on his crippled foot, Zane darted away, straight back to where his sword was pegged into the earth. Dorian tried to snatch up the slack in the cord to restrain him again, but before he could bring it tight, Zane had reached the weapon and had a firm grip on the hilt. Dorian jerked him backwards, but Zane came willingly, rushing at him with the point of the blade levelled at Dorian's throat. Dorian ducked under it, and they circled each other. They were still linked by the umbilical cord of silk. Zane was laughing silently, but it was a sound without joy. He mock-charged at Dorian, forcing him to dodge back, and as soon as he had made slack in the cord for the move, Zane darted to where Dorian's scimitar was still standing at the far end of the circle. Before Dorian could bring the rope tight, Zane had grabbed the second weapon out of the ground. Now he turned to face Dorian with a blade in each hand. A silence fell over the multitude, and they watched in awful fascination as Zane stalked Dorian round the ring, while the executioners shadowed him from behind, waiting for him to step out of the ash circle. Watching him carefully, Dorian realized that though he favored his left hand, Zane was almost as dexterous with his right. As if to demonstrate this, he rushed forward and cut right-handed at Dorian's head. When Dorian ducked out of the stroke, he thrust with his left, and Dorian could not avoid it. Although he twisted aside, the point scored his ribs, and the crowd howled to see blood spurt. Mansur clutched at Jim's arm with such strength that his fingernails cut through the skin. "He is hurt. We must stop it." "No, cuz," Jim said softly. "We cannot intervene." The pair in the ring kept turning, as though the cord that linked them was a spoke of a wheel. Dorian still held the slack of the line between his hands. Zane was quivering with eagerness for the kill, his mouth working, his eyes burning darkly. "Bleed, pig, and when you have shed your last drop, I will hack your carcass into 50 pieces and send each bit to the furthest corners of my empire so that all men will know the penalty for treachery." Dorian did not reply. He held his end of the cord lightly in the fingers of his right hand. With total concentration, he watched Zane's eyes for the signal that he could charge again. Zane feigned a move with his bad leg, then sprang forward off his strong side. It was exactly what Dorian had anticipated. He flicked out the bite in the cord, and then, with a snap of his wrist, shot the loop forward like a whiplash. The silk cord slashed across Zane's right eye with such force that the blood vessels burst, the pupil and the cornea shattered, and in an instant the eyeball was transformed into a fragile pink sack of jelly. Zane screamed, high-pitched and shrill as a girl. He dropped both swords and cupped his hands over his injured eye. He stood blind and shrieking in the centre of the ring. Dorian stooped and picked up one of the scimitars. As he came upright again, as graceful as a dancer, he drove the point into Zane's belly. The shriek was cut off from Zane's lips. One hand was still clasped over his eye, but with the other hand he groped down and found the gaping wound in his guts from which blood, intestinal gas, and detritus bubbled. He sank forward onto his knees and bowed his head. His neck was stretched forward. Dorian raised the scimitar on high, then swung it down. The air fluted softly as the call of a mourning dove over the steel, which found the joint of the vertebra and sheared through. Zane's head jumped from his shoulders and thumped onto the hard-baked earth. His trunk remained kneeling for a moment, with the severed arteries pumping, then toppled forward. Dorian stooped, took a handful of the silver-streaked hair, then lifted high the severed head. The eyes were wide open and darted from side to side with a loose expression. "Thus I avenge the Princess Yasmini. Thus I claim the elephant throne of Oman," Dorian shouted in triumph. 1,000 voices joined in the cry. "Hail to Al-Salil! Hail to the Caliph!" Beshwayo's impis leapt to their feet and, led by the king himself, thundered out the royal salute, "Bayeti Nkosi, Bayeti!" Dorian dropped the head and reeled from the effects of his wound. The blood was still streaming down his flank and he might have fallen had not Mansur and Jim rushed into the ring and supported him at each side. They half carried him into the fort. The rooms had been stripped of every stick of furniture, but they took Dorian to his own bedroom and laid him on the bare floor. Mansur ordered Rahmad to call Zayn al-Din's personal surgeon, who had been waiting at the door for this summons. He hurried in at once. While he bathed the wound and stitched it closed with catgut, Dorian spoke softly to Mansur and Jim.
"Tom made me give my word that I would not tell you this until the fighting here was over. Now I am released from that promise. As soon as our defenders abandoned the fort, our brother Guy came ashore with a squad of armed men. They stormed into the fort. When Guy found that we had emptied the treasury, he came out onto the parapet and saw the wagon tracks. He must have realized we had sent the gold away. Zion had already landed his horses on the beach by this time. Guy commandeered mounts for himself and 20 of his men and rode out along the wagon road. There can be no doubt that he intends to capture the wagons." The two young men stared at him aghast. Jim found his voice first.
"The women. Little Georgie."
"As soon as we realized what was happening, Tom took Small Boy and his musketeers. They chased after Guy."
"Oh, God," Mansur groaned. "That was yesterday. There's no way of telling what's happened since then. Why did you not tell us this before?"
"You know why I could not. But now I am freed of my promise to Tom." As he turned to Mansur, Jim's voice cracked with anxiety for his family. "Sarah, Louisa, and Georgie.
Are you with me, cuz?"
"Will you let me go, father?"
"Of course, my son. And all my blessings with you," Dorian replied.
Mansur sprang to his feet.
"I am with you, cuz."
They ran to the door. Jim was already shouting for Buckart. "Saddle up, Drumfire. We ride at once."